Well, good morning and welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is KYMN out of Northfield, Minnesota, the home of cows, colleges, and contentment. 1080 on your AM dial for almost 50 years. And, of course, now the one, 95.1 FM. Well, this has been kind of a weird week. This is a Friday. I know yesterday may have seemed like a Monday to you because of Wednesday, but here it is Friday. And I have a gentleman back that I asked if he would come back, and that is Commander Leon Dale from Faribault. I met him in Faribault during the Heritage Days Parade. He was one of the men that was carrying the colors and the color guard. Were you carrying the flag, or you were the gun guy, weren't you?
I was carrying
a rifle.
A rifle. The rifle's supposed to be to guard the flags.
Yeah, right. And anyhow, we got together. We talked about you. I know that you have some siblings. Your brother Larry is a year and a half older than you, and I think Lonnie is 4 years younger, and Linda, 10 years younger. And you married Shirley, and you have children, Nathan, Tim, Brian, and Chris. Am I right so far?
You're right.
Okay. And you graduated from high school in 1960.
Yes.
And you were a commander in the Navy. And I didn't learn that until about 15 minutes before it was time to bring our show to a conclusion. And that fascinated me, so I wanted to concentrate on that, if I may, because you and I have something in common, and that is I graduated in 1960. I did not, whether you want to say fortunately or unfortunately, I did get drafted in 1964, but I went for my physical, and I had eczema. Some people say eczema, and they said I wouldn't last very long in the jungles of Vietnam. So they crossed me off their list after, of course, I had a student deferment. Now, you graduated in 1960, and you rose to be a commander in the United States Navy. And I want to know in detail, from the day you graduated in 1960 until you ended up retiring from the Navy, and I know it's going to be a great story, but we don't have a whole lot of time. So did you join the Navy when you graduated in 1960?
Yes, I did, Wayne. At the time there wasn't a lot of work to be had, and my I had two uncles that had been in the Navy during Korea, and they kind of influenced me a little bit. I thought that was kind of neat. And so right out of high school, I did join the Navy as an enlisted person. And I went to Fleet Sonar School in Key West, Florida, to learn how to operate sonar gear in the back of helicopters. And then I went up And to Norfolk, Virginia, and was in a squadron called HS-7, still out there, by the way, after all these years. And I operated the sonar gear in the back of helicopters, and we also did some rescue work on the, that was our secondary mission. We had a hoist on the helicopter, and we got involved with John Glenn in his first three orbits around the Earth.
Well, we can work our way to that, but what I want to know is that when you went in and they put you in that sonar division, how did you end up there? Did you take a test, or you just were put in the class, or how did you end up in that position?
Well, in recruit training, you do have a choice, and that looked pretty good to me. I wanted to fly anyway, and It looked kind of lucrative to me. There's flight pay involved, and a few other things that you don't normally get if you're a mechanic or something like that. So I did. I was enlisted for my time on active duty, and then I got off active duty and went to school.
Now, when you joined the Navy, that was pre-Vietnam. I mean, there was turmoil, but it wasn't a great awareness to the American people. But did you join for like 2 years or 4 years? How did that work?
Well, actually, it turned out to be 3 years. I was a minority enlisted.
You're a minority?
Well, if you were under 18, you could get out on your 21st birthday.
Oh, okay. I had a cousin that did that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you joined at 17.
Right.
When's your birthday? What month?
August 4th.
August 4th. Oh, you got one coming up. Yep. How old will you be? 76?
I'll be 76, yeah.
Okay. And so you got in that deal there because you knew if you joined at 17, you'd get out at 21. That's 4 years.
It turns out to be about three.
Oh, okay. So then after you're up, I don't know if that's how they say it, but okay, young man, you're up. What are you going to do? So what did you do after being a sonar guy?
Well, after I got off active duty.
Yeah, when was the John Glenn thing?
Well, that was.
Was that that little time period there?
Yeah, it was. It was in 62, I believe.
Okay, so you were an enlisted man.
Right, right.
And you're on the what's the name of the ship you were on?
USS Randolph.
The USS Randolph in the Pacific.
In the Atlantic.
In the Atlantic. And John Glenn goes up in a space ship. Yep. And circles the Earth three times and then has to come down. And they come down by way of a parachute, as opposed to the kids today. They know that they land a big plane or
the,
whatever.
The space shuttle lands.
Yeah, right. Yep. So now he has to come into, from outer space, he has to come in through space, which is very hot. And then at a certain elevation, did they man the parachutes themselves, or was it all, computers were big back then, physically. So how did that work? Do you know?
As I recall, that was all automatic.
Automatic, yep. Okay. So now you're on this USS Randolph, and you're going to be in the back seat of a helicopter. How big was the helicopter?
They were called SH-34Js. They had a 1,500-horse rotary engine on the front of them, and they were probably twice the size of your normal Bell helicopter, which you would
see. So you could get eight people in there or more?
Oh, yeah. The Marine Corps used the same helicopter, and they'd get 13 in there, I believe.
Okay. So now he's coming down, and were you watching it on television? Or, he's going around. How long did it take him to go around the Earth three times? You recall?
I don't really recall. But
hours, days?
Oh, not days, but hours.
Okay. And so when did you learn you were going to be assigned to the helicopter to go out and see if these guys landed alive?
Well, that was all done ahead of time. I had a pilot who was a senior pilot, and the senior guys got a chance to do what they wanted, and I was his air crewman, his sonar operator. So
he picked his crew.
Right.
So he knew you, and you knew him, and you guys got along.
Right.
And he was an officer, and you were an enlisted man.
Right.
Okay, where was he from, do you recall?
Oh, he was from the, he was from the, originally from the Hampton Roads area of Virginia, which is just across the bay from.
I just thought, I wondered if he was a Minnesota guy or something.
No.
Okay, so you're selected, and ahead of time, you know you're going to be the sonar guy, and you know you're going to go out and drop a couple of guys down to pick up the astronaut, and that had to be pretty exciting, I imagine, looking forward to that, huh?
Well, it was a day that I'll always remember. Other than that, it's just a normal routine that we did.
And so, but you knew, didn't the crew know that they were being watched by American television and the world because of this? This opportunity to pick them up when they, you know, nobody knew if they were going to come back alive. I mean, there was maybe some confidence by the naval personnel, but the American public didn't know, are they going to survive this thing? What was your thought there? Did you think it was going to just work the way it was supposed to work?
Yes, it was just a routine thing as far as I can see. There was a little, as I read later, there was a little trouble with his heat shield, and it was designed to stand probably twice the amount of heat that it took, or that it really needed to take. But it still got plenty hot in there. So I recall reading later that he wrote about that.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you got to the spot where you landed, how far from the ship did the spacecraft land?
About 15 miles.
Okay, so now you're on the way.
Right.
Okay, now these guys are trying to stay in the spaceship, or what are you?
Capsule, I guess.
The capsule, thank you. Mm-hmm. Stay in the capsule, or are they trying to get out and bob around in the water till you get there? Were they out already when you got there?
No, they weren't. In fact, with John Glenn, one of the astronauts by the name of Lovell blew his hatch, and the capsule sank, which was a big loss because there's a lot of information on there. But John Glenn, he hoisted him right out of the capsule, and it was just a routine thing.
Well, did you get a bird's-eye view of that? I mean, where were you, like, seated compared to where they were rappelling or dropping the cable down with, I assume, a Navy SEAL to go down and assist in getting him up in the helicopter?
There weren't Navy SEALs at the time. There was a guy riding along that I dropped in the water, a swimmer. I believe it.
Were you running the?
Yeah, running the hoist.
Oh, you were. Okay. So, and, go ahead.
And what was I going to say? I got a mental block right now.
Yeah, I know that happens. While you're thinking about that, we'll take a brief break and come back. And I know you'll remember we were talking about whether or not they popped the door. Lovell did, and the thing sank, but John Glenn stayed in the capsule until you guys got down there, and we'll pick it up from there, all right?
Right.
All right. My guest this morning is Leon Dale. He is from Faribault, Minnesota.
G'day, mate. How you going? Come on over to the Minnesota Zoo and check out our spiffy Aussie exhibit, Kangaroo Crossing. Bring your mates and get up close and personal with the roos, wallabies and emus. Roam the land without any barrier between you and the wildlife. Crikey, it's like we brought over the real outback. Kangaroo Crossing at the Minnesota Zoo. Presented by Think Mutual Bank. Open now through Labor Day. Learn more at mnzoo.org. Celebrating 40 years of amazing.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
Whether you're running from the paparazzi or scoring from first on a well-stroked single, you'll want to be seen wearing a Twins flash cap that changes colors as light hits it. On Saturday, July 7th, you can light things up as the Minnesota Twins play the Baltimore Orioles. The first 20,000 fans will get a Twins flash cap presented by your select Heartland Chevy dealers. A cap that changes color? That's brilliant. This is how we baseball. Visit twinsbaseball.com.
Welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio out of Northfield, Minnesota. This was the number one song of all of 1960. My guest this morning is a gentleman by the name of Leon Dale, and he graduated from Faribault High School in 1960, and this was the song that they played last at dances, so you could slow dance with your girlfriend or your boyfriend or whomever. Percy Faith. And a theme from A Summer Place. Okay, Leon Dale, we're back. You are operating the wrench that is going to allow the Navy personnel to go down and rescue John Glenn from the capsule that had made three orbits of the Earth, and that was a big first. It was very exciting, and you let him down there, and John Glenn stayed inside the capsule till the Navy guy got there?
Right. I remember what I was going to comment on here. They weren't known as Navy SEALs at the time. They were called underwater demolition teams.
Okay.
And it was a pretty tough outfit.
They morphed into the SEALs, I suppose.
Yes, they did.
Okay.
That was a... The swimmer did a good job. He got the what we call the horse collar hooked up to John Glenn, and we hoisted him up.
Okay, so now he's coming up, and you're the guy in charge of bringing him up. Did it go through your mind at all that, hey, this is history in the making, and I better not screw up with this hoist? I got to make it nice and steady and calm. And, of course, there are cameras that are taking pictures of this from various news outlets. Did that pass through your head about, I got to be careful?
No, not really. It just was a routine thing.
Okay.
We did that all the time. We practiced it, and we did it in real life.
Okay, here's the big question. When he finally had his feet inside the helicopter and was capable of either sitting or standing up, did he still have on a space helmet?
Yes.
He did?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when he took that off, how far away were you from him?
Oh, a couple feet, probably.
Oh, right there.
Right.
So he took it off. Did he shake his head and say, hello?
I don't remember.
Oh, but did you get to talk to him, shake his hand after
you
got his uniform off or whatever it's called?
Yeah, I got to shake his hand and introduce myself. And the pilots, of course, they got the airplane shut down. And
what does shut down mean? Landed.
Landed. And
okay.
Landed and
shut down.
And the rotors stopped.
Okay.
We were very careful that. Nobody was out in
tarmac.
The arc of the
blades.
Well, it was on the aircraft carriers.
Yeah.
Oh, it was a flight deck.
Okay.
So we had to be very careful that nobody was out there in case.
Who was the first one off the plane or helicopter?
He was.
And did were the Navy guys on the USS
Randolph?
Randolph standing there and all applauding when he got off?
Yes, they were. There was quite a group on the flight deck.
Yeah.
And the CO of the ship, of course, was there to greet him. And it was a...
The what of the ship?
The commanding officer.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
At that point.
Did you get to take pictures at all?
You know, I think I... It was a little bit hazy that day, and I had a 35-millimeter camera, and it wasn't enough light for it. So I took a time exposure, which kind of turned out, but...
Kind of, huh?
Yeah.
You still have it?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Did you show it to your grandkids?
Oh, I haven't, no.
How old are your grandkids?
Oldest one is four girls and two boys.
Your oldest grandkid?
Yep.
So you're a great-grandfather.
No. Not yet. I'm just a grandfather.
Oh, you mean your oldest son, Nathan?
Nathan?
Yeah, has grandkids. Your grandkids.
Yes.
And how old is the oldest one of his kids? Your grandchild.
She'd be 18.
So she could understand maybe the importance of what your job was that day.
Well, I'm sure.
Nowadays you never know, but I'm excited about it to get to sit across from you and talk to a guy that, you know, rescued John Glenn from the first orbit of the Earth. That's a big deal. I remember when that happened. What year was it?
I think it was 1962.
1962. So you were just a kid out of high school.
Yep, I was.
Boy, oh boy. What a thrill.
19 years old.
So then what happened after you got him down on the ship on the USS Randolph? Did you just go to port or did they helicopter him to land?
They helicoptered him to land.
Well, I would assume there was a big greeting on land for him.
Yes, I'm sure there was.
And you guys stayed on the ship?
Yep.
Okay. So did any other enlisted men ever come up to you and say, hey, man, did you get to shake his hand?
Yeah, I think that happened several times.
Did you ever get a memento from that? A picture, an autograph, or a coin or something?
Not that I know of.
So it to you was just an everyday thing.
Yep.
Just like today's kids would say big deal because we went to the moon. Right?
Yep.
Well, that had to just be a thrill. By the way, my guest is Leon Dale from Faribault, and we're talking about the fact that he was the wrench guy or hoist guy.
Winch
guy. Too much racing in my head. The winch guy on the... helicopter that rescued John Glenn from the ocean after the first orbital flight by mankind, which is a big deal in my book. So thank you, by the way, for serving the country, and good for you that you got to do that. That's a part of history. By the way, what did you do Wednesday, the 4th of July?
I went out to... Northmore Stone 4th of July celebration.
You did?
Yep.
I was there.
Weren't you?
Yeah.
Oh, well. I was in the color guard.
Well, I was right in front of you.
Oh, okay.
I was on the motorcycles, you know.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, I remember them.
And did you get wet?
No, actually, the rain held off until we got through, and I assume... It held off till you got through, too.
You know what? It's funny when you know how it goes right through the park, and then there's all that parking, but there's an exit in the grass, you know, right? And I was right behind Sheriff Troy Dunn, and when we pulled in, and the guy that it was, we ride in side by side with other trikes. The fellow that was riding side by side with me turned into the area where they serve pop and hot dogs and all that. And they're always very nice to us. We all get a hot dog or a burger and some pop or whatever we want. And we usually go there and stand around and watch the rest of the parade. But this time, I just went straight ahead, got up on the road, and took a right. And that road then ends up in a T. And there's a house with a garage that if you don't turn left or right, you drive into their driveway. Well, it started raining so hard. You know when it did.
Yep.
And it was just like taking a shower. I mean, just straight down and a lot of rain. So I pulled in the driveway of this house and then turned around and kind of got under a tree. And then somebody yelled, "Hey." And I turned and some lady said, "Come on, get in the garage." So I went and stood in the garage for most of the rain. And then I got back on the bike and ended up going around the lakes and back to Northfield. And then went to Vestley later on in the day for their parade. So I didn't see you, but I saw you guys lined up with your colors ready to go through the parade. And when the trikes go through and the sheriff, people start standing up for the colors. And, you know, you think, oh, they're standing up. The first time I ever did it, look, they're standing up for us. And then I realized that the color guard's right behind us. So that's what they're doing. And it's fun to see the people being patriotic and standing for the flag.
I'm very impressed with today's people, at least the ones that watch the parades, because they almost everyone stands up and puts their hand on their heart or does something like
take
that.
Take their hat off. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, so now you have an opportunity to muster out of the Navy because you're 21 years old. What did you decide to do?
Well, I worked for a year at E.F. Johnson Company in Waseca.
Okay.
Doing electronics. Because I had electronics background. And after that, I decided to go to school with the idea of being a teacher in mind. And I got a degree in 1969.
Okay.
The fall, or the end of the fall quarter. We were in a quarter system at Mankato State at the time. And then this opportunity came out to get a commission in the Navy.
Because so, you now have a college degree.
Right.
Okay.
And it was something that the commission was in intelligence, and it was something that they were looking for because I had a degree in. My degree was in social science or geography with a geography core, and that was something that they were looking for.
So you heard of Vietnam?
Yes.
Okay, and 69 was right in the heat of everything.
Yes, it was.
So did you then join up full-time?
No, I was in the reserve from then on, actually from 60... Four to 95.
Well, what do Navy people do? I know that the National Guard goes up to Camp Ripley for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. What do the Reserve Naval people do?
Go to the Gaining Command, which that means wherever you're attached to, usually you go to that. I had the opportunity to go on a lot of different exercises. They're always looking for help on exercises, and in those days, it was this sod business which I was in was a little, money didn't stretch, so it was a good income.
For the family.
For the family,
yeah.
Right. And... In my case, the first unit I was in was attached to Fleet Intelligence Center Pacific, which is in Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. And I got out there, I think, over the course of My reserve career, I spent just a little over 6 months out in Hawaii.
2 weeks at a time?
Yep.
Okay. Did you ever get involved with the Vietnam War?
No, I didn't. Never did. Always were on active duty. I was an East Coast sailor, and it just wasn't the opportunity to get involved with things the way they were going over there.
Well, did you ever serve on a ship as a National Guard or a reserve, rather?
Let me think about that.
Well, while you're thinking about that, I'll take a break, okay?
Okay.
All right. Once again, my guest this morning is Leon Dale. He achieved the title of Commander in the United States Navy, and he lives in Faribault and owns a sod business called Dale Sod Farms.
Are you looking for spacious senior living in Northfield? Feel at home at Northfield Retirement Communities, Northwood Pines. Available for individuals and couples, this assisted living combines the privacy of one-bedroom plus den apartments with family-style meals and care available around the clock. Visit us online at northfieldretirement.org or call us today at 664-3466. Northfield Retirement Community. Innovation. Choice. Tradition.
Your vehicle's engine warning light could mean something as simple as a loose gas cap or something serious and potentially expensive if you don't address it right away. Have our professional technicians at Witt Brothers Service diagnose and fix the problem as part of your overall preventative maintenance program. It could save you from costly problems down the road. Stop by Witt Brothers Service at 701 Division Street in downtown Northfield for all of your automotive maintenance and repair needs.
Millstream Commons Assisted Living is where the all-star seniors enjoy life in Northfield. From the delicious meals, the bright, spacious apartments, the volunteer projects, the bus trips we take, classes we attend, and the music we enjoy, there's something for everyone. At Millstream Commons, we treat everyone like an MVP. For more information, call 507-650-0141.
The Everly Brothers on the Wayne Eddy Affair. The number four song in all of 1960. The year my guest graduated from Faribault High School. Here's the title of the song. Well, Leon Dale from Faribault, Minnesota, once again, thanks for being here. Question, did we have a question before we took the break?
Yeah, you asked me if I served aboard a ship.
Okay, yeah.
And a couple of those active duty for training series were aboard ship, yes.
Now, did you get to have your family or at least your wife, Shirley, come out and stick around in Hawaii while you were working there?
Yes, she enjoyed that very much.
I would imagine.
I stayed in the BOQ out there in Ford Island.
What is a BOQ?
Bachelor Officer Quarter.
Okay.
And they had room for her also.
Nice.
And the rooms are really inexpensive.
Now, did you go do the duty in February or March or January or November?
Usually it was in the wintertime because...
Well, that's good.
I was in the sod business, so it'd be pretty hard to go during the working season.
So the Navy was real accommodating for you?
In that case, yeah, it was.
How about in another case where they weren't?
Oh, I remember one time I was an intelligence officer in VP 60, which was like our helicopters, it was a So the squadron was anti-submarine warfare oriented, and we had to go to we went to Misawa, Japan, and that was in the first 2 weeks of April, right when we're getting going on SOD. So that kind of hurt a little bit.
What was the ship you were on when you went to Osawa?
It was a aircraft squadron.
Okay.
VP-60.
Was it bigger than the one you were on in 1960?
Yes.
How big was it?
Oh, 12 airplanes and P-3s, they called them. P-3 Bravos.
Airplanes or jets? Or
well, they were turboprops.
Okay. Now, when you picked up John Glenn, you were on a huge carrier that had 5,000 people aboard?
5,000, yeah.
How about the one that you were on, you just mentioned?
Oh, no, that squadron, between the reservists and everybody else that were on there, was perhaps 500 people.
Oh, small, comparatively speaking.
Yeah.
Did you ever have to scrape barnacles?
Never did. I never was on a deck crew, no.
Never painted the ship? Or
no.
You never? So that was a wise choice, getting into that sonar thing.
Well, it was.
How about, where did you take R&R when you were single?
Usually come back home.
Oh, you wouldn't go to Thailand or?
No.
Nothing like that? No. Did you hear any stories about Vietnam? From some of your Navy friends that may have been, you know, in the Gulf over there?
Well, most of them didn't talk about it much. The guys I knew, at least. And that's just the way they were.
Yeah.
They just didn't.
I got a cousin like that was in a boat that would go up and down the rivers in the Mekong Delta, and he started telling me stories about it, and I was just flabbergasted. And then when I invited him to be on my show, he said no. And I was just kind of like his big brother, because I lived with my aunt and uncle for several years. And he kind of looked up to me, you know, as a 13-year-old would to a 19-year-old, for example. And he would not join me. He did not want to talk about it. And I understand that, but the story he did tell me was something else. But getting back to you, now, to me, a commander, that sounds like a big deal. Commander, I mean, it sounds like the man. But I guess admirals are bigger than commanders.
Yes, they are. They're at least two pay grades higher.
Okay, so there are a lot of people listening right now that are from the era of buck private, first class, corporal, sergeant, double rockers, triple rockers, master sergeant, second lieutenant, and on up the line. How does it go in the Navy? I never can remember how the Navy goes. And this is before the E ratings, I think, the E-5s and E-6. Mm-hmm. Okay, how did it go in the Navy?
Well, when I was on active duty, it was always, you were known by an E rating. But it went from seaman recruit to seaman apprentice to seaman to petty officer third class, petty officer second class, and petty officer first class. And then it was chief petty officer after that.
No, they all did not get saluted, right?
No.
Well, that kind of confused me. Why did they, the word petty is explanatory, but officer, you know, petty officers, like you're just a little nothing officer. Do you have any idea why they, excuse me, why they would call somebody an officer that doesn't have the rank and respect and the pomp and ceremony of the salute and all that stuff? Why is that, I wonder?
I think it's just tradition. Just tradition.
So chief petty officer would be like the master sergeant or grandmaster or whatever they call them.
Right.
And then after that, you're no longer enlisted. You are an officer.
And you're an officer.
Okay. How does the ranking go from that chief petty officer to after that? How does it go?
Well, it goes to warrant officer 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Okay.
And then it goes ensign.
Ensign?
Ensign.
Really? I thought ensign was just like an enlisted guy.
No, it's...
O-1
is ensign. O-2 is Lieutenant J.G.
What's J.G.?
Junior grade.
Okay.
And O-3 is Lieutenant. O-4 is Lieutenant Commander. O-5, which I was Commander. O-6 in the Navy is a Captain. And O-7 is a Rear Admiral, lower half.
Okay, and then all kinds of admirals all the way up.
Right.
What's the top gun, top admiral called?
Fleet Admiral.
Fleet Admiral.
Yeah.
Okay. They're in charge of a whole bunch of ships and stuff.
Right.
Wow.
There aren't any fleet admirals in the Navy right now. It's a wartime rank.
Okay.
So it's O-7 is...
Operations?
O-7 would be the highest, and it would be, Admiral. Let's plain Admiral.
So as a commander, what was the one after Commander?
Captain.
Okay. I'd rather be called a commander than a captain.
Well,
that sounds cooler. Hey, Commander. Yes, sir, Captain. What would you like?
Yeah, it is a little bit different because O-3 is in the Marine Corps, the Army, the Air Force are known as captains.
Okay.
So I was on active duty one time sat in the same offices as a captain in the Marine Corps. And when he would call somebody on the phone or something, he would make sure that he said he qualified, this is Marine Corps Captain Jones or whatever his name was, I forget, and is not to, if he said Captain, somebody would take it as, oh, this guy I better...
Well,
better jump up and down for.
Yeah, well, so the captain in the Navy was not as the same pay grade and respect as the captain in the Army.
Oh yeah, he was like a full colonel in the Army.
Oh, so the guy was saying it, so other people wouldn't think he's gonna he's a Navy guy and he can come down on him. Okay.
Yep.
Okay, so what was the most dangerous thing that ever happened to you or to a fellow naval person aboard either the USS Randolph or the smaller ship that you were on in Japan?
Well, the most dangerous thing, I was pretty fortunate. I never... got 2,000 hours of flying under my belt and helicopters, and never had a serious incident. So I really can't think of anything, Wayne, that would be very dangerous. Oh. I almost got a story related to that. When I was I was a lieutenant commander in the in the reserve. Somebody from Washington called me up and said, see, how would you like to be the CIA station chief in the Azores? I thought to myself, why in the world are they coming way down to a lieutenant commander in the reserves for a job like that? Well, I found out a couple of days later, the one that had been there was assassinated.
Oh. Did you decline?
Right, I did.
Yeah. So by being associated with helicopters, you got a higher salary called flight pay?
Right.
Okay. So you were taking every advantage you could to make the biggest paycheck as you were going through the ranks.
Yeah, I guess you could put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you do, you know.
Right.
Okay, so what was your role in Faribault in regards to either the VFW, for example?
I'm a member of the VFW. Actually, it's in Mankato, where I went to school.
Oh, okay.
And a member of the American Legion Post in Morristown. I got to correct you on one thing. I'm from Morristown.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I did that last time. You're from the home of Jim Hermel.
Right.
Yeah. And who was a guy that was a Jack? He was a mayor of Morristown at what time?
Jack O'Rourke.
Yeah. He was a mayor, too, wasn't he?
Right.
Yeah.
He was.
Did you know Jack?
Oh, sure.
Would you like to hear a story about Jack?
Yeah.
Okay. When Hermel built the racetrack down there, Morristown Speedway, they had outdoor plumbing. And when the outhouses were built, in a commercial sense of the way, they built them, and then when you went to use them, they were built as if you were going to go in there and stand, always. If you sat, your knees would open the door. I'll never forget that. They did correct that, but it was just funny.
And Jack was a carpenter, and I suppose he built them.
Yeah, that was the humor there, yeah. So do you know the Almonds?
Yes, I do.
Okay, because I think it'd be interesting. Now, he's the mayor, isn't it, one of the Almonds?
No, the current mayor is a guy by the name of Kurt Wolf.
Kurt Wolf, okay.
And,
Almond was the parade, in the Morristown parade, was he like the guy the honor in the parade? I thought I saw him go through the parade. Parade marshal, that's what the word.
Parade marshal, yeah. I believe so. Him and Larry Allman was a year behind me in high school, and now his boy Mike runs Allman's Gun Shop.
Mike, okay.
Yep.
It's 10 minutes before 11 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair, and the folks at the QB, the Quarterback Club, invite you to stop in today. You know, they gave the employees a day off on Wednesday, the 4th of July. And they are, of course, back in business, ready to go. Lunch today. Who wants to go to work cooking today? Why don't you just go ahead and order from the Quarterback Club? You can pick it up. And by the way, don't forget, they'll cater anything. If you want to have a family picnic, they'll be more than happy to provide the meat or the scalloped potatoes or whatever you want. Chicken is a big deal. And it's all available on their menu for picnics and special events. And of course, they have regular breakfast every day, Monday through Saturday. The Quarterback Club, locally owned and locally managed. My guest this morning is Leon Dale, and we're talking a little bit about his time in the United States Navy, serving our great country. And when we come back, I drove by a sod farm the other day, and I came up with a question. I'm going, I wonder if maybe Leon can give me the answer. We'll be right back.
Have you stood in a gym surrounded by equipment and wondered what you should be doing? Have you stepped onto a treadmill with headphones and just zoned out? Step into CrossFit Scopos instead and let our coaches and community challenge and change you with a program scaled for you and a whole community of people cheering you on to be your best self. Go to CrossFitScopos.com and learn more, then take a free class. Come talk to me, I'm Greg Berube, the owner. That's CrossFit Scopos in Dundas by Menards.
Hi, I'm Pam Fekencher, senior pastor at St. John's Lutheran Church in Northfield. St. John's invites you every Sunday to a joyful musical service of Word and Sacrament at 8:30 and 10 a.m. We're located at 500 3rd Street West in Northfield. If you can't join us in person, listen live at 8:30 a.m. on AM 1080 KYMN or online at kymnradio.net. You are always welcome at St. John's. We hope to see you soon.
Darren College, a former NFL Super Bowl champion, signed the most important contract of his life to serve in the Army National Guard.
I've had a lot of military in my family. It's a big part of what my family's done for a long time. I want to go out there and make a difference. I didn't find that working behind a desk, so for me it was a pretty easy decision to make. And then the opportunity to serve my community and serve my country was just icing on the cake.
To learn how to be part of the Army National Guard, log on to NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
We continue on the Wayne Eddy Affair. This is the number three song in all of 1960. Elvis?
Yes, Lord, never.
And that's the title.
Come home, you tell.
The man, Elvis Presley. Well, let's get over to Leon Dale here. Leon, I was driving by a sod farm the other day, and I remember talking to you about peat, and peat is used to grow sod and all that. But I don't know whether you have to find a place where there is peat or that you can put peat in place.
Well, you have to find a place where there is peat soil or organic soil, yes.
And what is peat soil? And I remember saying to you that it seemed to me I'd seen it start fires.
It will burn. It's because it's organic. It's decayed vegetation. And, yes, it will burn, especially along spoil banks or something like that where you've dug a ditch.
Well, to have a sod farm, do you have to go out and look for peat?
Oh, there's some sod is grown on mineral soil, like we call it, or non-organic soil. Although in Minnesota, I would say about 90% of it is grown on organic soil.
Okay, so would a person that owns a peat farm, would they find it more valuable as a peat farm than selling it off to, you know, continue building homes southward from the Twin Cities? You know, there's several sod farms between here and your place and in the Twin Cities.
Right. Well, on the northern suburb, there's one whole sod farm got swallowed up by housing development, and what they simply did was harvest all the peat, pile it up, and haul it away, and then haul dirt in.
And then the peat could be sold to somebody else for starting or having a standby or added to the acreage.
Oh, I don't know exactly what happened to that particular peat.
How deep is peat?
It can vary from just 6 inches to 12 feet, I suppose.
Wow, yeah. Holy cow. How do you cut a slab from the time when you were first exposed to peat farming to today, where you're still involved in it at age 76 come August? Harvesting peat, there must have been a dramatic change since in the years you've been in it.
Well, basically, it's about the same.
Really?
The equipment is a lot better now.
A lot more expensive.
Right. It is. And when when we first started out, it was with a 12-inch Ryan sod cutter. And now Brower and Trebro are the big names in the sod cutter business.
How big are they? How many inches?
Oh, our machines are 24 inches wide.
So?
As compared with 12-inch.
So it's twice as big.
Right.
Does it really go twice as fast then
to
harvest?
For harvesting, well, now it comes up in front of the people in back of it that are stacking the sod. And we've got one machine that is called an auto stacker that stacks itself too. It's a little bit heavy for the rains we have or have had, but that thing will come up and put five rolls on a little platform there, and then a device comes down to grab it and set it over on the pallet. So,
how long is a slice of sod?
Ours are 6 feet, 3 inches.
Any particular reason why, or is just that the way the equipment works?
Well, when the Brower harvesters first came out, they were one-yard rolls. But we discovered that if we have a yard and a half in a roll, why, it goes a lot faster because you're handling half as much, again, sod as per trip.
How much can a guy carry?
Oh, usually one roll is about it.
Yeah. And did they do it in teams? Do you usually have four or five guys, a truck driver, and three or four guys that take it off the truck and run it into the yard or wherever?
Our outfit, I should first qualify that I'm pretty much retired right now.
Okay.
I do run the books for...
Okay.
I got three boys that took over the business.
So that would be Leon, Larry, and Lonnie.
No, that's my brothers.
Your brothers. There would be Nathan, Tim, and Brian.
Tim, and Brian, yep.
Yep. And Chris is...
He's a school teacher in Waseca.
Okay. So, do you have... the average home, do you know what the average home takes in square foot or square yards? Or
square yardage is the way we sell it. That's what the county and city and county and state go by, is square yardage.
Okay.
And the average home will take, on an average size lot, will take 1,100 yards.
Oh, square yards.
Square yards.
And how long does that take generally if it's a flat surface? Not, you know.
For us to install that, usually there's we have a skid steer ahead of us that levels it out, and the crew helps out with that, and that only takes about a couple hours to lay.
So you can do two, maybe three.